Hey, Bonk.
Hi.
How's it going?
Going great.
I think it's also going great. I was about to do an intro thing and just go into the thing, but then that's too quick into it.
Yeah.
What do we talk about? We have a podcast.
We talk about how, my love, my darling. That's me serenading you.
Oh, is that the song from the movie we're watching?
Yes.
Should we jump into it?
Well, first of all, we have to discuss what we're doing here, Dan.
Right. Well, what we are doing here on this podcast is we are celebrating, of course, what time of year is it, Bonk?
It's summertime.
And we're watching Swayze. That's right. It is the summer of Swayze. And as you can tell from that was not actually the song playing out of your speakers. That was Bonk singing Unchained Melody.
That's right.
Here's a weird thing. Doesn't it seem like Unchained Melody seems like an old song that is, Ghost is the movie, by the way, that is set in modern times, at least when it was made. It was set in, late 80s, 1990, but it's like an old sounding song versus Dirty Dancing, where what's the song in that? It's like, I've had the time of my life. That's set in the 60s, but it feels like a song from the 80s.
Well, that one is more confusing. I think in the case of Ghosts, like, they're just listening to people listen to older music.
That's
all the
true.
Time. Like, I think the song probably came out in the 50s, so that was, 25 years earlier, 35 years earlier.
I guess it's true. Like, if I go to Spotify, I can easily play a song from the past. I have much harder times trying to play music from the future.
Yeah, it would be like anytime we listen to music from the mid-80s, it's like the same as them listening to Unchained Melody in the 90s.
That's true, and we do that frequently, so.
Yeah, the Dirty Dancing thing is really weird. Like, that movie may as well have been set in the 80s, because people, I feel like, are dressed like they're in the 80s. Everyone's dirty dancing like they're in the 80s.
If there is a real timeless quote. Let's just talk about Dirty Dancing, because it turns out we like that better than Ghost. So
yeah.
Let's lay the groundwork for Ghost here. Which, this is weird, because the whole time watching it, I think we were not loving it. And then we look up stuff about it. And, okay, many confusing things about Ghost. It's directed by Jerry Zucker from the Zucker Brothers, who did, like, Airplane and The Naked Gun. Like, total screwball parody comedies and stuff. And then they make this ghost supernatural drama romance thing.
Yeah.
Which, it's not, like, watching it seems very, very corny. We're going to go into that. But then we look it up, and it was nominated for Best Picture in 1990.
Yeah.
It was nominated for 5 Oscars. It won Best Screenplay. Whoopi Goldberg won, for which, I can't argue that one too much. Whoopi Goldberg does a great job in this.
Yeah, she does.
But, like, nominated for Best Picture, this was a massive hit. It made over $500 million on a $22 million budget. And at the time of its release, it was the third highest grossing movie of all time.
That's unbelievable.
What? Okay, let's get into this, because we were not Swayze experts before starting this summer, embarking on the summer. Without a doubt, this is the least cool Patrick Swayze we've seen.
Yeah, I feel like he just came off Roadhouse, right? He probably wanted to do something a little more sensitive to showcase his the breadth of his abilities, and went for something a little more romantic. And, I don't want to say he's lame in this movie. It's the movie that's really lame. Like, it's how lame is it? It's this lame. There are little animated demons running around at the end of it.
Like, well, hang on. Now we're getting into stuff that traumatized me as a child.
Oh, that's what scared you?
Okay, so we'll cut to the end, because we're not going to go beat by beat on Ghost here. But there are two bad guys at the end. I think you were asleep for the first one when Willie Lopez dies in the car accident. I looked over and you were just zonked right out. But that was
I don't remember.
You were totally asleep for a chunk of the end of this. But it's these like weird demons show up and drag the bad guys to hell after they die. Willie Lopez, this mugger who gets dragged to hell after a car crash, and Carl, who's just some D-bag that was like laundering money.
Carl.
He gets the glass thing scared the hell out of me as a kid. That was the one thing I remember from this movie, was the glass thing. And for some reason in my head, I remember that happening at the beginning. But also, I was probably like 6 years old when I watched this on VHS and don't remember anything because I was an idiot. But the hell demons, I think it scared me so much because when I saw it, I was just a little child going to Catholic school, and we were just taught to, like, just fear hell
sure.
more than anything. And if you die, you're going to go to hell. But obviously when you're six, you know, they're trying to scare the shit out of you with the hell stuff, but they're not, like, going into – they're not reading Dante's Inferno, you know? And so to see this, like, visual depiction, maybe the first time I'd seen it as a kid, of, like, oh, my God, these shadowy monsters are going to come and drag me into hell and just eternal hellfire. That – seeing that play out on screen was just like, oh, my God, is that – what's going to happen if I'm not a good person?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I could see it traumatizing a young kid. I thought it was really, really dumb. But, you know, I know that America as a whole was more religious back in the early 90s. So I could see a lot of people being looking at this and being like, oh, it's a simple showcase. You're evil, you go to hell. You're good, you go to heaven. And heaven is a bunch of white twinkly lights and hell is a bunch of angry demons.
Yeah. We don't even get a glimpse into actual hell, you know, where the Event Horizon went. So we don't see the hellfire and the devil shoving coal up your ass or whatever.
Yeah, so like I said, I don't know if I mentioned this, but this is the first time I've seen this movie. And I knew about the famous pottery scene.
Yes.
Which I'll admit was erotic.
Sensual.
I knew that Patrick Swayze's dead. He's a ghost, whatever.
Where'd you get that idea?
I thought it would be more about, like, Demi Moore than, like, the adventures of the ghost. And I was really, my mind was boggled at the prospect of, like, let's say you die. And you're stuck in this in-between where you're free to roam around the world and no one sees you,
okay,
right?
I'm trying to picture, like, this happening to me. Walking around. Okay, yeah.
Eventually you gain the ability to be able to, like, this part is so fucking stupid. By the way, the ghost laws in this movie are just completely arbitrary.
We need to get into that.
Yeah,
yes.
But you gain the ability to, like, through force of will, manipulate things in the real world, like have a physical impact despite being, you know, like a gaseous form.
You can move pennies, you can type on a keyboard, you can break glass.
Yeah. So would you really just, like, all your time be centered around trying to solve this crime? Wouldn't you go do awesome shit that you wouldn't be able to do when you were living? Like, wouldn't you be marveling at the idea that you're now in this new state of being instead of just trying to desperately hold on to, like, your old life?
Well,
because at the end of the movie, Patrick Swayze goes up to heaven, so that ability to roam the earth is forever lost.
Let me defend the actions of the ghost of Sam Wheat.
Okay.
Because he died protecting his wife, Molly, or his girlfriend, Demi Moore, and he knew something was afoot. He witnessed as a ghost that there was something afoot, that the same Willie Lopez is breaking into her house and that Carl might be up to something. And so the whole reason he is in this form is because he has unfinished business and he has to protect his beloved. And so that's his whole goal. And that's why he doesn't ascend to heaven until after his earthly duties are done.
Yeah. I get it. And that's a very, like, cliches thing where, like, I am a ghost, I have unfinished business. But, like, it's he spends however many minutes, you know, in the pursuit of justice in this way. But what about all the time he's not doing that? Like, I want to see the downtime. Like, what is he doing? Is he going to, like, prisons, places he wouldn't be able to go to, really rich people's mansions, like,
no,
swimming in the ocean? Like,
I'm totally against you with this, because if something similar happened with us and I was a ghost and I thought you were in danger, I would do everything I can every waking moment from the afterlife. I don't got to take time to sleep or eat or take a shit. I'm a ghost. I'm going to try to protect you. If I can have some sort of influence, I'll go do some weird energy focused training with a subway demon and learn how to influence things so I can teach you that I'm really a ghost and I'm here to protect you and pass critical information on. I would not be trying to do fun ghost pranks if you were in danger.
Well,
Absolutely not.
I get it. But, I mean, this movie is, what, like 2 hours long?
Yeah.
And we see all the investigation happen within those 2 hours. Like, I assume this movie takes place over several days at least, right?
And, a few, yeah.
Yeah. So what about the downtime, the quiet moments where he's a ghost? You know what I mean? Just walking through the streets of New York.
We see some of the nights. There's the weird scene where he's singing that Henry VIII song, trying to keep Whoopi Goldberg awake.
Yeah, but that's, again, directly related to the
I don't think there's a lot of downtime. I think we saw a lot of it. I don't think he was ever twiddling his thumbs, you know, sitting on a swing set.
All right, Dan. Well, let me move on to my second critique. This young couple lives in this ridiculous loft in New York City.
I didn't even think of that, yeah.
Which is obscene. Like, this was back in the day before people, like, thought about, like, oh, maybe not everyone in the world looks like that, or not everyone is white, not everyone is rich. Like, back in the day, like in the 90s with Friends, and, like, this movie's perfect example, people just see this and just be like, oh, yeah, of course they live in a giant loft. Like, she's this insanely wealthy artist. Like, okay.
Oh,
and they can't even afford to take a taxi home from Macbeth. They have to walk through, like, the worst fucking neighborhood in New York City and then get killed. Like, Sam Wheat gets killed. Like,
he
just
does.
Hop in a taxi.
You know, you are right, too, about how, like, you know, Seinfeld. Like, Seinfeld in the show is not Jerry Seinfeld as we know him, extremely successful and rich comedian. He was, like, working gigs and stuff. And
no,
he's
pretty successful in the show.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess he's, like, pitching TV shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's not, like, the tier that he was in real life, but he was definitely a successful comedian.
It's like if Seinfeld didn't get the show Seinfeld, that's what the character is. Where he was successful enough to maybe get a show, but it didn't happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But yeah, that was weird and dumb. Like, cunt, you live in New York City in the early 90s. It's not like the place it is today. I mean, they wouldn't know that. But, you know, like, you're a rich couple. Just fucking get a taxi.
They didn't have the Uber, you know? Maybe if it was
late at
night.
Taxis abound in New York
City. I
guess
that's what New York City is known for, especially back then. It was taxis everywhere. Yeah. I didn't think about how awesome their place is. It is very, very awesome. It has those huge ceilings and stuff. It's got the big staircase. It's in is it Brooklyn? I saw a lot of it was filmed in Bed-Stuy.
Yeah, I thought their apartment was in, like, Soho or something.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's one of the things that really bothered me about this movie is just everything was so arbitrary. Like, the ghost rules, like, Oda Mae Brown, she was a fake psychic, but then all of a sudden she's able to really communicate with the dead. Like, it's just, it's all so silly.
It is, but I don't love it, but also would it be better if they had, like, a lengthy explanation of, like, here's why she wasn't in tune with spirits before, and here's why Sam Wheat can talk to her.
No, just make it so she was always in tune with spirits.
Oh, like she's never, like, a fake.
Like, yeah, we see her the moment, like, she's hearing Swayze, and she's like, what? Like,
yeah.
What? Like, why was Swayze the one to suddenly bring her into the, you know, into the communing with the dead fold?
Yeah.
I don't know.
This movie made me wonder if Swayze doesn't have much range, to be honest. He's so good at what he does, and, like, Roadhouse and Dirty Dancing, they're both kind of, like, the smoldering cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he nails that.
I think that, you know, doing a lot of Swayze-related research surrounding the summer of Swayze, you know, he's obviously a very handsome guy, but I was surprised to learn about the extent to which he was considered a heartthrob. Like, you know, groups of women would disrupt filming of movies to, like, scream at him and follow him around and stuff. He was a major, major heartthrob.
He was like a DiCaprio of the day.
I guess
like
so.
Like a young DiCaprio, like Titanic era.
And while I agree that he lent himself very well to, like, more action-oriented roles, I guess they were trying to capitalize on that, like, in this more romantic setting. Which, you know, he did fine. I feel like Demi Moore was more of a presence than he was, for sure. Obviously, Whoopi's performance was probably the best, just because it seemed like the most well-rounded.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she was more of a fully fleshed-out character.
Demi Moore is basically just crying or about to cry, or like the two states of Demi Moore in this. And Swayze, the Swayze stuff is weird because he's, like, jokey in this sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like when he's singing that song, or like there's, like, little comedy bits and stuff. And I don't think it really plays. I don't think he was great at comedy necessarily.
Yeah.
And he there's the part where he dies and he realizes he's dead and his face is like,
oh,
it's just,
oh my
it's
gosh.
The most cartoony. Like, that's when I was like, is he bad at this?
Yeah. You know what I think it might be? And this isn't a knock on Swayze at all. You know, we love the guy. I think he might just lack charisma. You know what I mean? Like, he's very good with his body and stuff like that. But, like, just look at Roadhouse, for example. He really didn't say much.
He just had to sit around and kind of have that presence.
Yeah. Even Dirty Dancing, like, the moment you see him, he's dancing filthily.
He's like a pro wrestler that you see him out in the ring, you know, wrestling a match, and they've got a presence about him, and they can do the match great, you know, great wrestler and everything, but then you give him a mic, and it's like, oh, he's missing that part.
Right.
You know, I can kind of see that.
Yeah, but you know what? This is all just to say that, like, not necessarily knock on him, just to say, like, I don't know if this was the best role. Although, obviously, it's, like, probably the highest grossing thing that he's ever done.
That's the thing. This was a unmitigated success. This was a smash fucking hit.
Yeah. It had a $22 million budget. It made $505 million box office.
That's bonkers success. Again, third highest grossing movie of all time at release.
Mm.
What? Like, that's crazy. Like, yeah. I knew this was a big hit, and I knew people knew this movie. I remember my mom loved it growing up, but I had no idea the level of success here.
Yeah, yeah. Learning that was really surprising. Learning that it was nominated for Best Picture alongside, like, Goodfellas was really surprising.
Was that the Silence of the Lambs year?
No, Dances with Wolves.
Oh, right. That was huge back then, too. Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
I haven't.
I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how it holds up, but I remember when I was a kid enjoying it.
Yeah. One of the cooler parts of the movie was when Sam kind of like merges with Odomay and like has a sensual moment with Molly. It reminded me of that scene in Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. It's like a prostitute thing, right? Like,
Yeah. He has like the holographic girlfriend and he wants to like be with her physically. And so he hires a prostitute to like be with him. And then she kind of merges with her, like overlays her body in a way.
It's a very subtle face thing that was messing with me in the theater when we saw it. Yes, I remember that. Back to the ghost rules. So I was thinking this right away because, all right, he's establishing that, like, oh, his hand, like, you know, he puts his hand down to his physical body and his hand goes through his face. The ghost hand goes through the face. So it passes through people. It passes through doors. It passes through just general objects. But, like, you can sit in a chair. Like, yeah, he goes to the hospital.
He could walk around.
Yeah, he sits down next to an old guy ghost and just sits in a hospital, and the chair apparently counts.
He jumps into the path of an oncoming train, goes through the train, and lands in the train.
Yeah, and that's where we see Vincent Schiavelli. Do you recognize him?
I can't put my finger on from where, but I definitely recognize
him. He's totally one of, like, those guys, character actors, and he's got such a distinct face.
Yeah.
I mainly remember him from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He is in that.
Oh, maybe that's what I recognize.
He's really good in that. And actually, watching this, it's so interesting to me because something, when I first saw him in this movie, something, like, fired in my brain that I was like, oh, I remember being really scared of him because he just looks really scary and he's very violent and yelling in this. And I remember back to a recurring nightmare. It's like the one recurring nightmare I had throughout my childhood. And I can picture what this bad guy in the nightmare looked like. And it was totally just him from this movie. And like, I've always remembered that face and everything. I can remember the nightmare very distinctly. And there are shadowy little figures running around just like in Ghost. So
wow.
I wonder if I started having this recurring nightmare. Can I run you through it real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I've told it somewhere before.
By the way, Razor. Razor's snoring in the background.
Razor, my God. All right. I'm trick-or-treating. This is the dream, the nightmare.
What do you dress as?
I don't remember, but I had this dream probably from like around the age of 6 to like maybe like 9 or 10. I feel like I've had this dream 40 times. But I'm trick-or-treating, and I start going up to this house to trick-or-treat, and then Vincent Schiavelli, he's like, oh, yeah, come in, we got candy. And I go in, and he's like sitting in a recliner, and then there's this guy that looks kind of like a human version of Luigi, sitting in another chair, and they're both just being really weird, and I'm just like, in the dream, I'm just like kind of wanting to leave the house. I'm like, I don't know, I feel like I shouldn't be here. And then the Vincent Schiavelli guy is like, oh, can't you see him over there, he's a pirate. And then I freak out and I go to run out, and then as I'm running down the stairs in front of his house, I freeze and I can move. Like, my legs are like running below me, but yeah, I'm not going down the stairs anymore.
Okay.
And I go to yell and I can't yell.
Ooh, I hate that.
And then I look over in the driveway and I see a little shadowy figure kind of scamper across the driveway. And then I look up at the moon and it's a full moon, and I see the shadowy figure cross over the moon like E.T. or Mortal Kombat, you know? But yeah, the main guy, he's a pirate guy. It was just Vincent Schiavelli as he appeared in this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so this movie deeply affected, it inserted itself into your subconscious for years.
Yeah, definitely of that age, because like, that's when my mom would have got it on VHS. And I distinctly remember my mom saying, one time she was home alone, like I was at school or something, and I got home from school, and my mom was like, you wouldn't believe what I saw, you know, earlier today. Like, that candle on the fireplace, like, I guess we just had like a single candle there. She goes, I was sitting right here on the couch, and I saw it just bounced off or just fell off the fireplace and like moved across the room. And she was like, yeah, I swear to God, it was like Patrick Swayze in Ghost that he, you know, like he grabbed it and moved it across the room. And now that I think about it, the candle probably just fell down and rolled a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? Like, when she made it sound like it was, like, ghostly moving like, around the room.
Little legs sprouted up, like, wax legs.
It sang
legs.
A song, and yeah, yeah, it was a whole weird
it's
thing.
It's like a Beauty and the Beast, the candle guy.
Yeah.
I forgot his name. Candle guy.
Yeah, the candle guy.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I guess I have weird memories about surrounding this movie from when it came out, but I just don't know if I ever sat and watched the whole thing. I don't think I would have understand. Like, there's a ton of stuff about like laundering money, like Carl's doing all this stuff and like trying to like assemble money into a fake account, and there's a big scene where they go to a bank and Whoopi Goldberg has to like do a false identity thing to pull the money out, and none of this really landed for me.
No, none of it landed for me either. Like, all the Swayze stuff, the whole like trying to sort out this weird money laundering thing. It was just boring. I didn't find Tony Goldwyn or whatever his name is, Carl, to be particularly compelling.
I don't recognize him from anything either.
He is Fitz in Scandal. He plays the president in Scandal, that show Scandal with Kerry Washington.
Current show, right?
I don't know if it's still on, but
I mean, it's a
relatively
recent show.
New, yeah.
Oh, okay, so I guess he's still working, I guess.
That's what I recognized him from.
Got it. Okay, I didn't recognize him from anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Swayze's performance wasn't doing it for me. The overall plot, like, it just kind of felt campy.
Mm-hmm. I will say only Demi Moore could pull off that haircut, though.
It's a young boy haircut.
Yes, but she's a beautiful lady and she pulls it off well.
Yeah. You going to get that haircut?
Yes. Yeah. Can you imagine? Oh, my God.
I cannot imagine that.
That would be bad. Oh, my face is bad.
Nothing really hit.
That's why I'm just growing my hair out to be as long as humanly possible. Just to try to conceal my face and distract
go
people.
Go over it like Cousin It from Adam's Family. I love your face.
Yeah.
All right. That is the first kind of downer of the Summer of Swayze. And again, maybe we're just being snooty dickheads here, because obviously this is a beloved movie.
You know, I feel like with movies that are insanely popular and quote-unquote beloved, like, chances are they're not going to be great. You know what I mean?
I kind of disagree.
Movies that appeal to the majority of people, like, they're not going to be great movies.
Everyone loves Jaws. Everyone loves Indiana Jones and Jurassic Park. You know, like, those are beloved by the super mainstream, and, like, those movies kick ass. You know, Star Wars.
Well, yeah, you're mentioning Star Wars. I don't want to incur the wrath of anyone, but, like, they're fine movies. I don't think they're amazing movies. You know, they're for when they came out, they were very impressive and building this whole world and everything. But, like, as a movie, they really weren't.
I love Star Wars.
Yeah, well, I mean, I enjoy them too, but I certainly wouldn't rank them among, like, the best movies ever.
But in terms of just, like, movies that were so successful, they just kind of broke through to every, you know, taste in movie. Like, Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
The first Rocky. I feel like that is universally beloved by, like, film snobs and, like, action fans and just every age and demographic you can imagine.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, these are all anecdotal examples. But yes, I think that, you know, there's a good chance that the movie will be either bad or fine, but rarely amazing.
I feel like it's the thing every time we watch a Marvel movie.
Marvel movies I've never enjoyed. No. I find them to be unbelievably mediocre.
And at best, it's just like, yeah, I didn't hate it, but I'm not going to remember anything from it. I know we've said this like a million times on it, and like, you know,
They're just not. I mean, I know a lot of people, they're just not for me.
No, me either. Except for that Spider-Man one.
I need some tragedy or just wacky. Like that Star Wars movie is so, like, genuinely hilarious at times and visually so amazing.
The Spider-Man movie, you mean? Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. That one's awesome. All right. Well, that is Ghost. We will.
It
return.
Is what it is.
Yeah. The summer's not over yet, so we'll see if we hit with a if we catch the big one next week. You know, people fish in the summer, right? I would assume. It's nice.
What are you
out.
Talking about? Point Break.
We haven't decided, but I'm just saying in general. Hopefully, we catch the big one. I think it's probably Point Break, but I wasn't.
Okay,
we didn't. We hadn't decided
like a
yet.
Fishing? Are you?
Yeah, I wasn't doing the fishing reference to refer to the movie itself. I was just saying in
I don't
general.
Know. Is there fishing in Point Break?
And I was not making that connection at all. Okay. I was saying like in general, whether it was going to be Point Break or another Swayze movie, it had nothing to do with the content of the movie. Just like, oh, hopefully we catch the big one.
So what does that mean? What does the big one mean?
The big fish. We caught the big fish.
Are you saying, like, we'll watch a movie that we will enjoy?
I guess it was a weird way of saying watch a movie we'll enjoy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Catch the big fish.
I didn't say fish. It was an implied fish.
Okay, well, now you're saying it a lot, so we might as well just cut out the middleman and say,
I'm
going to
cast
fish.
Out a reel into the water. I'm going to wait a while. There might be some nibbles that
there's
get away.
There's going to be a little mini game.
Yeah, there's going to be mosquitoes biting me. It's going to be annoying. Hopefully, I brought enough beers in the cooler, and hopefully it doesn't rain. And then maybe one of those nibbles, I'll pull back and I'll set the hook, and then I'll pull back left and right, depending on where the fish is doing the thing. I'll hit A at the right time when the bobber goes underwater, and I'll have a big, big floppy wet fish named Point Break sitting in my hands, just dripping all over the boat, and then we'll put it out on a podcast.
Yeah.
How's that?
That sounds great. Okay. But you have to say a cute little phrase when you pick up the Point Break fish.
Oh, yeah. I'll give you a pointer. Break into a Kit Kat.
Here's my point. Don't break it.
We should write video games.
Yeah.
We're really good at this.
We are.
Yes. All right. Enough Ghost. We will move on next week to more Swayze. But for now, we will move on to the Hugh game. And the Hugh question
game.
Of the week. What school subject always came easy to you?
Art.
Interesting. Do you feel like there are other kids in class that were just like floundering and just like... We know people that are like art teachers, and you'd hear about like, oh yeah, a kid just like does the most like basic thing. Like what was the analogy or the example we heard recently with a friend of ours who's an art teacher?
Well, my sister-in-law is an art teacher, and she was talking about like this one student in particular who wasn't handing in any of his assignments, and then all of a sudden handed them all in, but he just like downloaded pictures off Google and said they were something he made.
Well, yeah, or there would be assignments that were like, oh, draw something with like something about the arms, and then they just did the most literal like stick figure with an arm or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it always came easy to me, and in like elementary school through high school, I was always like the best one in school. And then when I was like between junior and senior year of high school, I got accepted into the governor's school, which was, I don't know if they're still doing it, but the governor's school in New Jersey was this like 2-week program where they would take like supposedly the best students in fine art, like probably like 10 per subject, best in fine art, best theater performers, best like sound engineers, and what was the other? I think maybe musicians. And then we would all go to the College of New Jersey and just make art for 2 weeks.
Oh.
And I was unbelievably nervous. And when I got there, I went from being like, oh, I'm the best one in school, to being like, holy shit, everyone is so amazing here. And I felt so inadequate.
Really?
Yeah, because I was always really good at drawing, but I could never really paint. And they were all like amazing painters, and I was just like so intimidated, and they were all so confident, and like, you know, everyone was friends with each other, and I didn't have any friends. But yeah. I read the Wind Up Bird Chronicle when I was there. I remember that distinctively. I read the whole book by myself.
Kind of squirreled away, and you felt inadequate and socially anxious.
Yeah, I was scared and nervous, and you know, but I powered through, and it was one of the better experiences, most rewarding experiences, I should say.
And a happy ending. Excellent.
I guess so. What about you?
Definitely spelling. I was always really good at math up until like got to like, you know, like 8th to 9th grade algebra, you know, like basic math stuff. I could do mental math very, very quickly. But spelling is the one that like I've never, ever struggled with spelling. And anytime there's like a spelling bee in class or a like official school spelling bee or county or state spelling bee or something, I was always like, bring it on. Because I just had all the confidence in the world. I never had to study anything.
Yeah.
It's just once I saw a word, it just kind of locked in, and it's still been that way.
So is it like an understanding of how the vocabulary works, or is it like you see a word and then you just like know from then on?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think I don't have a photographic memory or a great memory in general. But you know, I do with certain things, you know, with like wrestling and video game knowledge and stuff. I'll like pull out dates and stuff, you know, but I won't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, you know. So it's a little bit of that photographic memory, and then a little bit of like, you know, I remember in the gifted program we would learn like Latin prefixes and suffixes and stuff like that, and so I had a just general good read on how things, like I could hear a word that I've never seen before in my life, like at a spelling bee. And I would just be able to kind of like, well, this is the way letters usually work, you know, and more often than not would get it right. And then that went on even after school to the drinking spelling bees they would do in Minneapolis. And I would just win that all the time.
It was great.
It was the one like kind of school thing where I was like, okay, I'm clearly head and shoulders over everyone here. And then when I was reviewing games before Game Informer, so the 5 years or so before Game Informer, I was writing all my reviews. This is pre-Google Docs. On a pirated version of Word that did not have spell check, because it just didn't have, I don't know, that file, or I downloaded a weird version or something. So no spell check. So I wrote like 600 video game reviews with no spell check, and not once did my editor say that like I ever had an error.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I do. I try not to be a prideful, boastful man, but I'm very confident in my spelling.
Well, it seems like it's something that came naturally to you.
Yeah, I like spelling. But I've said before, I don't know if I've said it on the podcast, but I did used to think that if somebody couldn't spell well, that it was an indicator of them being stupid. And then as I got older, I just got to know more and more like people that were geniuses, you know, just so much smarter than me. And they would like send an email and like everything would be misspelled. And I was like, okay, it's not that simple. You know, apparently spelling is just a very specific type of intelligence. And yeah, so.
Yeah. I don't think lacking in one area is an indication of your abilities in other areas necessarily.
No.
Yeah, it's really interesting, the memorization thing. Like apparently there's this like memory Olympics. I don't know if I told you about this, where people like compete like to see who has better photographic memory. And I watched this interview with this girl who was like the memory Olympics champion. And she was talking about like the trick she used. And like in this one instance, she saw a huge list of numbers, like a huge string of numbers, random numbers. And like she had it for like 10 minutes. And then like a little while later, she was able to recite the entire string of numbers like perfectly. Because she like, what she would do is in her, she had like a system where every letter would, or every number would be equal to a letter. And then she would create like, you know, stories based on what the numbers say. And then she would like every part of the story, she would attach to something that she's really familiar with in her mind. So like, you know, for example, something I'm really familiar with is like the town I grew up. So I would, so in like what she would do is like she's walking out of her home that she grew up in. She sees the first part of her story. She turns the corner right before the supermarket. There's this other part of the story, and she just like builds on it that way. It's it's really amazing the tricks people use. I mean, I know that some people like have certain abilities where they're able to be photographic, and like someone will mention a date, like
like Marilyn 20 Hinner years,
and they'll be able to say like what the weather was like and what they did that day, which is just mind-boggling.
The brain is a crazy, crazy thing.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, it is. You know what else is wild? The Panning the Stream Patreon.
Yeah, that.
Yes, we could have paid. What were you about to say?
You don't want to know.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I can tell you had something on the mind there. Patreon.com/panningthestream. It's a real simple Patreon there. It's $5 a month. It gives you ad-free episodes each and every month. Each and every week. We do this weekly, it turns out. It gives you, help me here. It gives you
access
early
to our Discord.
Access to the Rikert's Market Discord that is shared with the Twitch channel we do. So we got a nice active community in there. Games, entertainment, general chat. Good time in there.
It's a great little virtual town where everyone knows each other's names. And everyone, it's like Cheers. They all go down to the local watering hole and tell each other stories about pets and games. And everyone's real cool. And
I've learned a ton of stuff in there. Like people have helped out with like, oh, I didn't know you could do that thing with this old game. You know, like, and try it out on a stream. Like they're great. So, you will have access to that if you are a Panning the Stream patron.
Yeah.
Also, you get the episodes a day early. You're going to get them on Saturday instead of Sunday. And most importantly, you get your own personal, made-for-you Bonku.
That's right, folks. a banku for you.
Who is you this week?
This week, we are honoring our dear friend, Joe.
Joe!
You may know Joe from such songs as Hey Joe by Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
And
Fat Joe, of course.
Fat Joe, what's love? I don't know, Joe, you tell me. Gizmo. Other songs with his name in it, because it's easy to rhyme words with Joe.
Joe Walsh did songs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Joe, this banku is for you. That gift was for Joe, she screamed while her roommates ate the cake meant for Joe.
I really like that. I always hear them for the first time on the podcast, too, and I'm frequently delighted. Joe, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. That's a fun banku for Joe. Sorry about the cake. And to anyone listening, hey, if you want to help out the podcast in a cool way, if you go to podcastawards.com, the Podcast Awards are a ceremony that's been going on for 15 years in the world of podcasts. They got in there early once podcasts started becoming a thing, and they got a category there called TV and Film.
Mm.
And so if you go to podcastawards.com, and you click the thing to go nominate, you will see we are in the drop-down menu. You click the drop-down under TV and Film, and you will see Panning the Stream, among other fine podcasts. Give us a little vote. Give us the nomination. Those are open throughout July, and then they will be announcing winners and final nominees and stuff like that afterwards. But your vote in that People's Choice category and TV and Film helps a ton. So if you got a couple minutes, you got a temp email account or something, or you don't mind giving out your own email address, go ahead and do it. That'd be awesome.
That would be real swell.
Yeah, I hope we get a trophy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Trophy or one of those like weird glass awards.
Yeah. That'd be, or a plaque or something.
A plaque
would be great.
Or like a basket of fruit.
Yeah, I would take any of these things. Or all of these things.
Or just like the ability to be able to like put a speech saying thanks.
Yeah, an acceptance speech.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a quicker way to get there. So that's it for this week. We want to do one of the speeches where you go up and give thanks and make a video for the thanks for the award. So go to podcastawards.com and nominate Pan the Stream. If you want to follow us, you can follow us at Pan the Stream on Twitter. Thanks to Tom Manda for the theme song.
Thanks, bro.
And give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts if you feel so inclined. But the summer will continue next week on Panning the Stream.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.